Welcome to Cider Chat. In this episode, 281, we meet Mary Bingham and Emily Kovac, the media team behind the online cider news known as Cider Culture. And I also have some very special news about an ongoing project that's been a little bit behind the scenes, and I get to reveal it to you today. We have that and so much more on this year's episode of Cider Chat. Hello, my name is Rhea Wincoller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world.
Hip, hip, hooray!
This week's episode with Mary and Emily of Cider Culture is part of a series that I'm doing on cider media. Because right now, we have a very small complement of cider writers, bloggers, you might say influencers, and podcasters in the world. And even a smaller complement of digital media cider newsletters, such as Cider Culture. And for this series, I am highlighting three particular media sources based in the U.S. And this week, it's going to be on Cider Culture. So I'm super stoked about that, and we'll be getting to that featured conversation. But first, we're going to have a wee bit of news out and about in Ciderville, beginning with a word from our sponsor, which is the Northwest Cider Club.
Emily Ritchie here from the Northwest Cider Association. We recently launched the Northwest Cider Club to make it easy to drink in the Pacific Northwest. We are a region that grows the majority of the nation's apples, and we produce a wide range of cider styles. Get insider access to our Northwest cider scene. We ship quarterly boxes to your door from up to 10 producers all in one box. One of the things our members love about the Northwest Cider Club is the chance to taste and compare, like you can with this season's apple-focused selection. This quarter, we actually have two ciders made from the old and classic cider apple, the Porter's Perfection. My friend Darlene Hayes from All Into Cider recently wrote about it, saying the Porter in its name is one Charles Porter, born in 1844, of East Lambrook, a small village in the southwestern English county of Somerset. It is easy to identify this apple due to its regular tendency to form fused fruits together. Usually this is in twos, but sometimes in threes or more. Porter's ciders are always full of tannins and have high acid. In the Discover Northwest Cider Club box, we've included Tyotin Cider Works Porter's Perfection from Yakima, Washington. In our Elevated Cider Club box, we have Pair Up's Center Ring Private Reserve Porter's Perfection from Wenatchee, Washington. This offers two distinct opportunities for you to taste this bitter sharp cider apple, both grown in central Washington state. Pull out your flavor wheel and enjoy comparing notes, tasting both ciders side by side if you order our combined Elevated and Discover Club box, where all 10 ciders are in one box that ships to your door. Learn more at nwciderclub.com/podcast.
All right, quiet in the cider house here, Palms. Thanks, Mr. Quince. It's really okay. I have a feeling that the makers out in the Northwest would be excited to know that the Talking Palms and everyone else out there in Ciderville is really excited to be able to order cider from that region. And you could do that by just going to nwciderclub.com/podcast. It helps support the Northwest Cider Club, which is part of the Northwest Cider Association. And now for some very big news. Oh, Mr. Quince, it's okay. We don't really need the drum roll. It's, you know.
It is big news, Rhea.
I agree. It is big news.
Indeed it is, Rhea, but I'm a little concerned about the title.
I know Perry Pear, it's not necessarily inclusive in the pear community, but it's kind of one of those things, you know, pears kind of come underneath the umbrella.
Indeed. I'm not sure what umbrella you're using, Rhea.
Perry?
Go ahead, Rhea.
All right, I will. But first, anybody out there in Ciderville listening, if you don't know who I'm talking to, these are my co-pilots in the Cider House. We have Mr. Quince, Perry Pear, and the Medlars. and they help me kind of formulate what I'm going to be talking about and are just general support.
General support. Once again, the Perry Pear takes a backseat to the apple.
Perry, you know that this is not what it's about.
Right, I do.
Sorry, Perry. All right, look, I'm going to go forward with it.
Roger that.
Thanks, Mr. Quince. I'm just going to cut to the chase. I am working on the New England Museum of Apples and Cider. And I have a couple duties in this project. One is to be writing the narrative for the New England Museum of Apples and Cider, bringing in both the past history and looking towards the future and the eventual building of a brick-and-mortar museum.
Yes!
So as you might expect, that's just like, I'm just over the moon for that role and just a high honor of being able to participate at any level. And I'm also going to be spearheading a feasibility study as we do a site location for the eventual brick-and-mortar building for the New England Museum of Apples and Cider. And to get this party started, we're going to have the first traveling museum. We're actually planning many traveling museums throughout New England. And the first one's going to take place on September 4th from 10 to 5 p.m. at Sholin Farms in Leominster, Massachusetts, which also happens to be the birthplace of John Chapman, who's widely known as Johnny Appleseed. Right now, we're looking for artists who can set up in several locations within the lush and peaceful orchard to paint and meet with visitors. Because you know how much I love palms and art. I mean, that goes without saying. Any kind of painting that has an apple theme or a pear theme.
Thank you very much, Rhea.
It's okay, Perry Pear. I think there's some pear trees there, too. Anyways, I'm going to have links in the show notes where you could contact Russell Stephen Powell. Essentially, it's russ@newenglandapples.org. And we're looking for submissions from artists no later than August 20th. Do know that the New England Apple Association is a nonprofit that has been educating consumers about locally grown fruit since 1935. You could check out more at newenglandapples.org. And of course, Ciderville, I'll be updating you as I move along with this amazing project, which honestly is a project that is long overdue for the U.S. to have a museum featuring apples and cider, and certainly is another sign to me, and I hope you, that cider is going up. And another sign that cider is going up is the fact that there is cider media. And that's going to be our focus for this week's featured conversation with the folks at Cider Culture. We're going to begin by hearing from Mary Bingham, who is both the publisher and owner of Dishworks LLC and the founder of Cider Culture. And then we'll be hearing from Emily Kovich, who is the editor of Cider Culture.
I am the founder and publisher of Cider Culture. And I own the company Dishworks that creates the content on Cider Culture. And we create the food and drink content for brands around the world. And we're also thrilled to create cider content specifically for Cider Culture. And as an advertising and revenue stream, all money that comes into Cider Culture goes directly to our partners at the American Cider Association. So we can talk more about that later, but that's kind of the dynamics of my role with Cider Culture.
Cider Culture is in some ways like a subsidiary of Dishworks.
Right. So yeah, Dishworks is my main company, like the biggest piece of my puzzle. Mm-hmm. As it stands right now, we create the platform to exist for Cider Culture, but the revenue for that platform directly benefits the association.
Emily, how about yourself?
I've been the editor of Cider Culture since 2017. Cider Culture, as it stands, is a digital publication. I try to always keep it really approachable, accessible, just welcoming to first-time readers, first-time cider drinkers, or lifelong devotees.
When did Cider Culture first get published? When did it actually go online?
So the very first post was January 31st, 2014. And I grew up in Apple Country. I grew up in Adams County, Pennsylvania. And I also had visited Ireland a few times. I actually lived there for a few months and discovered cider in pubs. And I thought it was the coolest, most magical thing that I could have a full pint, like a full huge glass of this cold, bubbly, fruity, refreshing beverage, and was so excited when people that I grew up with and went to school with in 2014 were starting to make alcohol out of apples in my hometown. So the very first post was an interview with the cider maker from my hometown in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. And I just realized this is the beginning of something exciting.
And you kicked that off solo at that point.
That was solo. Yeah. So I had another online food and drink publication for the greater, you know, Philly area, which is now a nonprofit. We help to fight food insecurity in Pennsylvania and tell the food and drink stories throughout Pennsylvania. And that publication is now called PA Eats and is a nonprofit to help with those missions. The very first post for cider, which is now on Cider Culture, was a sort of a beta test to see if anyone cared about cider the way that I did. So I published an article on this Pennsylvania food and drink website, and we watched the analytics to see if other people were as smitten as I was. And it turns out that they were, and that we needed a resource. So that was when we worked to come up with, you know, a name and a platform and got the domain name and just kind of pushed it out into the world.
Mm-hmm. Got the news rolling out there. How often is Cider Culture published?
You know, we publish content every week. So we're 100% digital. At least every week, we've got new, fresh content. And then sometimes we've got, you know, seasonal recipes that work really well. We've got like cider pickle recipes and barbecue sauce and all kinds of good stuff. So we'll kind of refresh those as seasons change and we get into different holiday seasons and that sort of thing.
That's awesome. So weekly online digital publication that people can subscribe to by going to ciderculture.com.
We don't have any sort of gated content. So you don't need to pay to access our content. You don't need to subscribe to anything in order to access our content. You can just go to ciderculture.com. But you can, if you want to, subscribe to our newsletter, which would put our latest, freshest cider news in your inbox. And that's the only thing, if you choose to subscribe to, that you can. Otherwise, we're there for everyone all of the time, open 24/7.
So how does that platform work as a business platform if you're providing it for free and all the revenue is going to the American Cider Association? How do you self-sustain yourself?
So like I said, the heart of what I do is through Dishworks. And Cider Culture was started really as a passion project. I felt that there was a platform, the platform needed to exist to celebrate cider. You know, we have some expenses to exist, and those are covered by advertising and anything above and beyond the to exist. So we essentially break even to exist. And then anything above and beyond that is a full revenue stream for the association. You know, it's been a very hard year for everyone. And without being able to do CiderCon in person and a lot of in-person events, the whole industry has had a tough time. And the truth is, the right thing to do is to put that money where it needs to go to lift the entire industry. And so that's what we're doing.
Mary, you said you discovered cider because you live in Adams County.
Harrisburg's right in the middle of Pennsylvania, and then just draw a line straight down, and that's where you'll find Adams County. Adams County is the largest apple producing county in the state of Pennsylvania, and Pennsylvania is the fourth largest apple producing state in the country.
Emily, I'm guessing that you do live in Pennsylvania, or you could be anywhere in the world.
I do live in Pennsylvania, also right outside of Philadelphia, in a small town in Delaware County. I've lived in Philly since 2004. And I love Pennsylvania too.
Cider is a pretty small niche in the beverage industry. There is all these different ways to describe cider versus, you know, hard cider, sidra, you know, all different languages that we could go into it, different styles of cider, different folks approaching cider. So how do you maneuver with that? And how do you prioritize your content in that way for Cider Culture?
I think that having a range of content is important. You know, we are not publishing 10,000 word essays or stories necessarily. You know, those deep dives, I feel like I do try to create space for. But mostly I feel like great storytelling really is the entry point for a lot of people. Maybe if they don't even you know, drink cider on the regular. I found myself reading stories about like a multi-generational family making sherry in Spain, even though I don't really ever drink sherry, because sometimes the storytelling is captivating or the images are beautiful or it's a transportive story that just teaches you something else about the world. So I think that's a great angle that we try to take. I also feel like we try to balance that with more snacky, bite-sized stories that talk about trends or talk about kind of fun things, a little bit more lighthearted. Just like in a magazine, I think sometimes there are your feature stories and then there are your sidebars and then there's photo essays. And it's kind of the totality of that package that I think keeps readers engaged and kind of draws in people from different angles, different sides of the industry. So if we have a story that's really focused on cider making or barrel aging, that might really appeal more to the professional readers that we have who've been in the industry and are curious about kind of what's happening on the ground in other cideries. If we have a story about rosé ciders, that might be more appealing to the person who's like, I just discovered this category. What's up with rosé ciders? What are they? How are they made? Why do some have beet juice in them and some have elderflower in them? You know, like, so I feel like it's that range of content that I think lets us reach people where they are. And I think that kind of speaks to my own interests. I'm interested in, you know, high art and low art. And I'm interested in, you know, I'm just interested in the range of experiences in all different categories, including cider. So I think trying to create a broad array of stories and have different voices featured on the site is really important. And I also really love to let cider makers speak for themselves. We have a whole series of Q&A, which to me, I love so much more than, I mean, I do like writing stories that are a little bit more feature-based, but the interviews, I feel like, really let people speak from their heart. And because we don't have the parameters of print where you have to stick to a certain word limit, people can, you know, we do edit, but people can speak and people can share their stories and these cider makers can show that there's so much more than just the liquid in the can or bottle. So I really love being able to put that out there too. And I think that that really helps to humanize the industry and help remind consumers that cider is not just a commodity, although sometimes it is, but that it's really an agricultural product with like real people working super hard to make these products live.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, Rhea, that's what your platform's all about, right? Is let it coming from the voice of the people working hard for this industry. So I'm sure you can relate.
I could totally relate. I'm thinking as Emily's talking, it kind of sounds like a charcuterie board for cider.
Yeah, I love that.
Right?
Yeah, I do think that, and then people can kind of snack as they wish.
Yeah.
You know,
kind of pick through it and find that. So, I mean, that's an interesting place that cider media is in right now, is that not a lot of folks have the background in cider coming into it versus for the wine world. There's just a long longevity of writers coming into it that actually know the history of it. And the same thing for craft beer. But the cider community, I'm certainly finding out that there's not that longevity that one might expect. Which is fine because we get to create the story.
That's right.
Do either of you actually make cider or in any kind of context like that, make it as like a home hobbyist?
My neighbor does, and he gives me some of his cider, which is a fun treat. Mm-hmm. But no, I have not experimented with making my own cider.
Okay. And Emily?
I also don't make cider. And this is only very tangentially related to making, but I am the co-owner of a bottle shop in Philly, and I sell lots of cider. So I feel like I'm in the industry in a different way as a retailer, and I do get to meet and talk with a lot of makers, and I think it's actually helped me really understand a lot more about what it requires to make cider, you know, on a professional scale. But yeah, I think making homemade cider would be really fun. I don't quite have the space, the time, or the energy. But When my kid goes to college, maybe that'll be my next project.
Mm-hmm. Well, that kind of leads me into the question of, knowing cider and understanding it. What do you think helps you as a publishing platform for the industry, for cider makers to be conveying in the message, and certainly like around their websites or those different tools that people are trying to like tap into?
I am a proud board member of the Pennsylvania Cider Guild, and I also help to organize the Pennsylvania Cider Festival every year. And so I don't make cider, but I have long-time relationships with a lot of cider makers and hear their needs and struggles, especially during the last year that we had. So we do use that as kind of a way to help understand what their challenges are, to help with the different packages that we offer it, with every budget on cider culture, so that you don't have to be a huge cidery to be able to have some of your marketing needs met. And also from the experience of creating content for brands, whether they're wine, beer, food, or other drinks, pull from the experience there through our Dishworks division to understand marketing needs and the ever-changing social media platforms and the types of content that's needed. And so from the way my brain is wired and my perspective, I kind of take the real life experience and challenges that I hear on the ground with people I know and love and trust in Pennsylvania, and marry that with the marketing know-how and best practices that we offer through our Dishworks division, and help to put together compelling packages and sponsorship options for our platform.
Emily, did you want to add anything to that?
I really love how creative cideries have gotten. I really feel like going to website after website that's like just a picture of an apple tree kind of starts to feel a little bit bland. I do think making the connections between agriculture and the finished products is always where there is interesting stories. So I really like the efforts at making those connections that cider makers have. I feel like I'm always interested in people's professional stories, if they come from a cider making or an apple growing family, or if they've had a career change. I always love when people are really transparent about their own stories. I think that lends a lot of authenticity. I really love creative branding and unexpected websites and social media presence. I think I can't help but respond to that.
I think it's really a good point you made, Emily, in that for like the super geeks like myself, I could just like drool over seeing all the apple trees. I could just like focus on those all day. But when we look at that broader picture, and for creating it more palatable for the audience of consumers who may never have even walked in an orchard, how do we keep on putting out beautiful pictures? What is folks doing there? Because that can become too stagnant. The Instagram could be, actually, Instagram, the cider Instagram is pretty static.
The cider, you mean the entire industry?
Yeah, a bit. Yeah. If you went to, if you're scrolling through your cider connections on Instagram, it's a lot of apples, which is great for, we're kind of all talking to ourselves, which I don't think that's necessarily the goal.
So as far as our audience, and then that kind of dictates how we talk to them when we establish who they are. So 60% approximately of our readers are straight consumers. They just are anywhere from newbies to enthusiasts with cider consumption. And then about 40% of our audience is in the industry in some format. So from a storytelling perspective, to keep it fresh there and what stories we want to tell, sometimes it's geared to, just great summer sipping options that you can find in, at your local bottle shop or distributor. And sometimes it's how to manage your cidery and how to handle some of the challenges in the industry. And another breakdown for our audience is it's 40% men, 60% women, and the average age is 35 to 44. And our locations are throughout the entire country. So, and even the world, we've got folks from all over the world who are reading and engaging with our content. And so we try to create content that keeps it fresh for all of those different audiences. And we have a women insider series that's great for kind of empowering and giving a voice to women that are kicking ass. I don't know if you can say ass on your program, but I think that
Absolutely.
They are. I said ass on Cider Chat. Hi, I'm Erin. I'm the founder of Cider Culture, and I said ass on Cider Chat. So we want to empower people that need to have more of a voice, and we want to tell those stories. And then we want to honor people like Emily said, who have never had cider before, or to your point, have never walked through an orchard before. And so I don't know. I don't think it gets monotonous. I think that there's so many stories to tell that as long as the industry keeps doing cool stuff, we're going to have endless amounts of cool things to talk about. And so Emily, back over to you with how to kind of curate those nuggets of interest and turn it into a story.
There's all different things that pique my interest. And some of them are related to things that I'm related to just in my own learning about all different kinds of fermentation. So we did a story recently about yeast and what is yeast and how does that part actually work? I mean, we didn't get, deep science-y, but it's something that I've just been thinking about a lot in my own, as I drink and explore and consume things. Like, I don't feel like, do I really understand how this works? I bet other people are thinking that too. So that's a story I might explore. Or I just had a really, killer pet nat cider, and who is making this? What is this a niche, or is this like a category we're going to start seeing around more and more? And consumers want to know what that really means versus it just being like a trendy French word on a label. Sometimes they have relationships with cider makers and we've taken the time to get to know each other, and their stories, resonate just because I know them as people, and I'm not just getting random press releases that I'm just like every press release, I feel like it's kind of the same. I do think there's a formula, and I get that for efficiency's sake, but I always want to know more. Did you put out a cranberry cider? Why? Where is that fruit from? Are you creating relationships with other farmers in your community? Are you out there in the bogs harvesting? What was that like? Or, if you're just making it with cranberry juice concentrate, that's great. I hope it sells great, but there's no story there. Are there relationships with other community partners? I'm always interested in how cider exists as a member of society, as, an industry that is defining itself in ways that just go beyond straight capitalism. And then when it comes down to branding, I have my own aesthetics and tastes. Like, I love art on things. I love eye-catching things. I feel like craft beer has done, and natural wine have done amazing things with using bottles and cans as canvases and working with artists and working with friends and really expressing, really creating these objects that are beautiful. You just want to have them in your home, and you want to open your fridge and see that. And is that, to feel like you're cool, maybe, but isn't that why we buy things? So I do feel like that does catch my eye when there's really thoughtful, really beautiful branding. That can be anything. Sometimes less is more. Sometimes more is more when it comes to can art and label art and photography. But I really like when a cidery has a really strong sense of what that is for themselves. And that, I know that can be an expensive venture. I know that a lot of cideries hire, huge design firms to do that for them. And I don't think it has to necessarily go that route. But I do think a lot of even super small family or farm cideries are starting to understand that component and carve their own way for what that means. Maybe it's not like the hippest, you know, agency creating a $1 million package for you, but something that feels intentional and that speaks to the intentionality inside the package.
Mm-hmm. You know, we're at this pivotal place right now with cider. There's really, in the scheme of things, very few folks doing cider media at a regular basis online as a business. There are a number of bloggers and influencers can be considered as businesses too. Mm-hmm. But in many ways, it's a pretty heavy charge that we have here to hold that narrative and to help elevate everybody at the same time and encourage them with really sound information that they can grasp onto and actually have attainable goals that they could do. Because, you know, everybody could have a PR firm. And I don't really recommend that because at this stage, the personal story is so key.
Correct.
So in terms of getting your attention to get folks onto cider culture and to write, you know, a short form piece or something like that, that is critical information, I think, for cider makers.
I think just for any media outlet, you know, I would say that we get a lot of samples sent to us. We get there's a lot of value put on not just our platform, but your platform and, you know, Cidercraft and Cider Scene and all of these publications that have humans working really hard to create those platforms and create fresh content. And so I would want cider makers to also know that if you value those platforms enough to want to be featured, consider investing in them because they can only exist with sponsorship and they can only exist because people invest in them. And so in the same way that we want to rally for cideries and investing in telling those stories in all different aspects of our beautiful world that we live in and specifically our Ciderville within our cider world, you know, consider investing in those platforms. If you feel there's enough value that you want those platforms to tell your story, reach out and just see what the most affordable package is. We offer something for every single budget. If it's just a social media post, some unboxing videos, we have product images for $75 each. If you need to freshen up your product images, we offer customized cider school opportunities to educate folks. We have column sponsorships, you know, and I would encourage people to sponsor Cider Chat, you know, put your money where you value things. And then you can, you know, platforms can experiment with more programming. That's my honest message to people is that, you know, you could send samples every day forever, but if you add up the cost and the shipping, there's probably a package somewhere that could help you tell that story. And when we have sponsored content, we handle that with care. We want to tell your story as a very important thing to tell people that hard work behind it. So, you know, getting a review from a blogger is a beautiful thing. A publication that is operating as a business, if you truly value them and you want them to exist, even if it's not cider, but it's any niche publication, invest in them. They only exist because people give enough of care to have them continue to exist. So that's my true, honest message. And just like you take sponsorships
Absolutely.
So, you know, it's important to not just hope and that you get free stuff. It's beautiful when that happens. But let's just like buying local or, you know, investing in the brands and the companies we want to see succeed, the power is within your control to make sure the platforms are there also.
Mm-hmm. Well said, Mary. I think that it's the truth. And thank you for kind of honing in on that, because it is at a really pivotal point. Having just watched cider kind of going through the ebbs and flows over the past, going on 30 years now, nearly, I have to be frank that I get nervous about that, because we need dedicated writers to be doing this, to really help elevating it and bringing up that quality of writing, and also the media outlets. And as media outlets become, well, we know on the more larger corporate level, they really have a control over the narrative. And so we are in this fantastic position to really help buffer that up, because every time I see cider culture, you know, it always makes me happy. It's always like happy stuff coming out. I mean, what's not to love about that, right? That's everything makes you to love about it. And you're like, go team, you know? I'm like, oh, okay, Emily, Mary, go, right on. Oh, you got it out another week. Hallelujah, you know?
Right,
it's
right.
Huge.
Right. Well, and I think people don't, you know, maybe they're intimidated by the word advertising. Maybe people are intimidated by a sponsorship, but I can't think of a time that someone has said, this is what I have to spend, while still being able to sleep at night.
And there you have it. That was Mary Bingham, the owner and publisher of Cider Culture, and Emily Kovich, the editor of Cider Culture. And I really want to give them a tip of the glass, because I honestly mean it. When I open up the news from Cider Culture, it makes me smile. It is a charcuterie of cider news, both nationally and internationally. So highly recommend checking it out on all their different platforms. Or simply go to ciderculture.com.
Walking through the orchards.
I want to catch up a little bit from last week's episode 280, which was all about the Ciderfield road trip I took to both New York and Pennsylvania. So that kind of synced really well with this conversation from these two gals who are based in the Adams County region, that big apple growing area. I mentioned in last week's episode that I have a t-shirt on TeePublic, which is one of the ways to support Cider Chat. Buy a t-shirt, wear cider, you know, proudly on your clothing, and all different kinds of logos. And one thing that I noticed last week is a lot of folks picked up the Save Orchards Drink Perry t-shirt. So thank you very much for that. And that spurred me to post another t-shirt up there called Save Orchards Drink Cider. So you could check that out at the Cider Chat swag store at TeePublic. There'll be a link in the show notes to that. And you also could go to this here episode 281 and actually see what that t-shirt will look like, what I put up there. I think it's kind of cute and fun. And kind of keeping in that thread, it's really important, not only from the cider media perspective, that it's not only helping cider makers, but it's really helping to save orchards. And I'm all about that. I believe that 100%. I love trees. I love apples. I love pears. I love quince, medlars, you name it. And being outside and walking in the orchard, there's like nothing better. And knowing that glass in your hand, that liquid gold, whether it's cider or perry, a apple brandy, it was made from those amazing trees that you're walking by. And it's up to us to really help be their stewards and their spokespeople, if you will, sending that out. And one way to do that is to have a t-shirt from Cider Chat TeePublic store. Save Orchards, Drink Cider. There you go. In case you don't know, Cider Chat is on TikTok. It's at Cider Chat, so it's really easy to find. And most recently, I've been posting video, little snippets from my Ciderfield road trip through New York and Pennsylvania. So right now, I think there's three or four parts to that story. And these are little video clips and photos that I was saving and are not necessarily going up on the other social media platforms that I use. So do check it out and follow at Cider Chat on TikTok. I would love to see you there. And with that, I leave you here. This is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
We like cider. We like palms. We love orchards and and having fun. There is a reason.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh, yes, there is. There is a reason. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet. We like cider, we like palms, we like orchards, having some fun.
There is a reason. There is a reason why we do it like this. Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh, yeah.
We like cider.
Oh, yes, we do.
We like palms.
Oh, yes, we do.
We love orchards, having some fun.
There is a reason.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum. Ba-da-da-dum.
We like walking down the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh, yeah.
We like cider.
Ba-da-da-dum.
We like palms.
Oh, yes, we do.
We like orchards, having some fun.
Yeehaw!